This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
U.S. officials say there's growing evidence Pakistan's ISI spy agency encouraged a Pakistani militant group, the Haqqani Network, to carry out last week's attack on the U.S. Embassy and NATO headquarters in Kabul. A U.S. Senate committee voted this week to make $1 billion in U.S. aid to flood-ravaged Pakistan, conditional on a crackdown on militant groups. Former Afghan President Burhanuddin Rabbani was killed Tuesday in a suicide bombing. A survivor of the attack, an aide to the former president, said Rabbani was lured to his death by the bomber, who claimed he was representing a mysterious figure mediating between the government and the Taliban's senior leadership. NATO leaders Wednesday authorized a 90-day extension of the alliance's mission in Libya. NATO began enforcement of a four-month no-fly zone over Libya in March. NATO fighter jets have flown more than 20,000 sorties over Libya, dropping thousands of bombs to take out Muammar Gaddafi's command centers and military materiel. Hundreds of civilians have been reported killed. Amnesty International says it has uncovered evidence that rebel forces in Libya have committed gross human rights abuses, some amounting to war crimes. The rights group also reveals the Western media deliberately ignored or covered up the widespread atrocities. In a report released Tuesday, Amnesty accuses the rebels of unlawful killings, arbitrary arrests, and widespread torture of civilians, mostly black foreigners. The report also confirms widely held concerns about the NTC's ability to unite the country and oversee a peaceful transition. Many attacks are focused on blacks suspected of being sympathetic to ousted dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The report states angry groups of supporters of the February 17th revolution shot, hanged, and lynched dozens of captured soldiers and suspected foreign mercenaries, and did so with total impunity. Gaddafi's supporters have accused NATO of killing up to 800 civilians. Amnesty says both the NTC and Gaddafi's forces are to blame. U.S. combat troops in Iraq may be heading to the exits, but the U.S. government's enormously expensive intervention there is hardly coming to an end. U.S. officials are planning to expand the gargantuan embassy in Baghdad, a heavily fortified, self-contained compound the size of Vatican City, by far the largest embassy the world has ever seen. Inside its high walls, guard towers and machine gun emplacements ring not just the embassy itself, but more than 20 other buildings. The number of personnel under the authority of the U.S. ambassador will swell from 8,000 to about 16,000.
More details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
You are listening to the Rule of Law Radio Network at ruleoflawradio.com. Live free speech talk radio at its best.
Tuned to Truth News, beaming out to you on the second day of November 2011. My name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to the show. Well, Truth News focuses on matters of injustice, and sometimes those matters of injustice that we look at are grand ones to do with war, civilization, financial collapse, scams that affect millions of people, crimes that affect millions of people. Sometimes we look at things that affect a smaller number of people. And in this case, we're looking at a crime that was committed against one person. And I am, of course, talking about Chappelle Corby. As you probably already know, if you're watching this podcast, you will have looked at our information and you will have read the information that we've provided about this topic, and you may have listened to some of our previous podcasts that we've done on this topic. Now, I've got two interviews coming up. One is an interview with a man in the UK who has been instrumental in creating a new website called The Expendable Project. That's expendable.tv, that has a lot of original research in it and some very important information that exposes government deception and corruption at the highest levels. The second interview I have is with Chappelle Corby's uncle, Sean Hatton, who has been on our show before, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about Chappelle. For those listeners who are not familiar with the story, I know many people listen to this show from overseas. It's not necessarily that widely known. But of course, in Australia, it's very well known. Chappelle Corby was a household name for many years in Australia. The case was just so shocking. It was the sort of thing that you could imagine it could happen to anyone. A girl goes on a holiday with friends and family, looking to have a great time, get searched by customs officers. They open the bag and they find all this drugs in her bag, marijuana, 4.2 kilograms of marijuana found in her boogie board bag, and she protested her innocence from the beginning. She's been protesting her innocence, and the unfolding nightmare was hard to believe. It was hard to believe for the family. It was hard to believe for her. They continued to believe that she would be found innocent because she says she's innocent, and I have it from her family that they believe she is innocent. There is a terrible miscarriage of justice that has happened. We had a saga of stories of corruption from within Australia surfacing during the time leading up to her trial. And it was exposed that there was a drug courier business running between major capital cities in Australia. And of course, Chappelle had flown from Brisbane to Sydney to Bali. And it emerged during the time that she was under the initial investigation that drugs were being put in passengers' bags as part of a drug courier operation, and that passengers were essentially being used as drug mules unknowingly. And the explanation that's being provided by those who say that she's innocent is that this is exactly what happened to Chappelle. Of course, we have cases where people have gone public saying that they arrived in Bali, opened their bags when they got to the hotel, and found marijuana in their bags. This has happened. It's been documented on national television in Australia. So, of course, many people think she's guilty. Many people, and I've had many ad hoc conversations with people, and they say, oh, look, I think I know Chappelle's guilty. And you ask them why, and it's almost always because they refer to some gossip that actually had its origin in one of the smear campaigns that was run against Chappelle by virtually all the mainstream media television channels and the press. All of which have been shown to be completely false. There is no evidence that connects Chappelle to the drug trade in Australia. Zero evidence. There is no evidence that connects Chappelle's father to the drug trade in Australia. Zero evidence. There is no evidence that connects Chappelle to anything that was going on in Australia that involves drugs. Now, people may be a bit surprised to hear this because they will have picked up the gossip from the mainstream news and they'll think, oh no, there was that story about the guy who came out of prison and said he was getting the marijuana over to Chappelle's father and that they were taking that to Bali. Or about the other guy that said he knew Chappelle's father and that he'd been paid to transport drugs for him. And, you know, oh, there was the neighbour of Chappelle's father who was busted for some marijuana plants. And, oh, there were all those claims made by Chappelle's friend. Yeah, and people remember all this stuff because it was all in the news year after year on all the channels. And the Corby family, Mercedes Corby, Chappelle's sister, went to the Supreme Court to defend the outrageous smear campaign against her that was done on Channel 7. And guess what? She won the case. Most people don't know that. Most people don't know that Mercedes Corby won a civil case against the smear campaign that was run by Channel 7. But look, let's just get back to this case of Here we have a person in prison. She's been in prison for 7 years now. She's been protesting her innocence the whole time. There is no forensic evidence that connects her to the drugs. There is no footage of her on any security cameras that could have been used by the prosecution. None of the security cameras were working that day, either in Australia or Bali. Mysteriously, none of that information is available. There are no fingerprints taken from the bag. There was no forensic analysis of the marijuana. There is nothing that connects Chappelle to the drugs that she was that were found in her bag, apart from the fact that they were in her bag. And of course, that is circumstantial evidence, right? Granted. But convicting someone purely on circumstantial evidence is an extremely problematic thing and a very unlikely thing to occur in any just legal system. You need more than circumstantial evidence. You need to prove means, motive, and opportunity. You need to have proof of where the drugs came from, how she got hold of them, that she wanted to sell them, and that she had the opportunity to do that. None of this was ever proved. There was no network of sales of her drug that was ever shown. There was never even any investigation of it in Bali or Australia. Her Australian network of suppliers was never exposed. There was never any proper research into that. There were never any arrests. Similarly in Bali, there were never anyone arrested or exposed as being a drug connection in Bali that would have been selling this massive amount, 4.2 kilograms, a massive amount of marijuana. None of that was ever done. So again, it's all circumstantial evidence. So we have a woman locked up on circumstantial evidence. We have evidence of drug couriers working within Australia using passengers as mules. But we have a government that, although it initially gave a weak support to the idea that she might be innocent, that eventually turned their back on Chappelle. And this was the Howard government. And of course, since then, she's just been forgotten. She's just been relegated to the black hole of memory. And we've been, we've been given our smear campaigns by the media to make us believe that she's guilty. And this has been done quite systematically across all the different channels, all the different press, all the different media. We've been fed this information, and it's worked, because most people now think she's guilty when you talk to them, because most people watch television and most people don't think critically. So again, this is a story of one person. This is a story of the injustice against one person. But it is so indicative of the sad state of our civilization that this can happen. And I'm not saying that as someone who can assert with absolute confidence that Chappelle is innocent. I cannot do that. But what I can assert with absolute confidence is she did not get a fair trial. There was not evidence that connected her to this. And there was no serious attempt to provide that evidence. She was sacrificed. And if it can happen to her, it can happen to you. It can happen to me. It can happen to anyone. And then this whole system clicks into gear that just ignores facts, ignores people's rights. And it's all about essentially ass covering. Okay. It's all about, oh, we don't want to expose this because we'll embarrass ourselves. And, you know, we don't want to say this because we don't want to offend that. We don't want to do this because of that. And in doing so, a crime is being committed against an individual. And this is a theme which I keep seeing again and again. I see it in everything that we cover on Truth News. It's the sacrifice of the individual. Again, it's another twisted, pathetic kind of illustration of this greater good theme. In this case, it's just the greater good of bureaucrats and politicians. It's the greater good of those who don't want to be embarrassed by admitting that, yes, there was this incredibly corrupt system happening within airports that the government did nothing about, and that led to a person who was innocent being thrown into jail. Of course, Chappelle was convicted and sentenced to 20 years. A most outrageous sentence in itself. But that's what happens when you sacrifice people for political expediency. That's the kind of extreme nature of what happens when you sacrifice people for your phony, baloney greater good, which is really just only the arse covering of politicians and bureaucrats. Now, I'd just like to explain some of the substantive anomalies in the case against Chappelle Corby. Firstly, she chose to smuggle marijuana to a country where the drug is worth a tiny fraction of its Australian value. She allegedly transported, undetected, the pungent-smelling bag through Brisbane Domestic Airport, Sydney Domestic Airport, and Sydney International Airport, past check-in staff, sniffer dogs, x-ray machines, CCTV, police, customs, and baggage handlers. She put her full name and address on the bag when she checked in. She openly proclaimed that she owned the bag when it was selected by Indonesian customs. She formally requested that the marijuana be tested for country of origin. She pleaded for DNA and fingerprint tests, which can only have harmed her had she been guilty. She refused to contemplate a plea bargain despite sentencing advantages. She begged for CCTV footage from Sydney and Brisbane airports. It goes on. But look, we're going to cut now to the interview with Morpheus from the UK. Please stand by.
Capital Corn and Bullion is a family-owned and operated business that has helped many families and friends in protecting their assets, and we would like to do the same for you. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer Patriot safes, ammunition, Berkey water products, gift certificates, wristbands, and our new silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and the Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 5. Visit us at CapitalCornAndBullion.com or call 512-646-6440.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
The interview you're about to hear was recorded live on Skid Row Radio Sydney on the 31st of October 2011.
Look, we have a very special interview coming up. Now, I want to just preface this with a short introduction. Already mentioned earlier about some of the issues about Chappelle Corby, which I believe that many people are not aware of because of the bombardment of government propaganda through the media. Now, the situation is quite distorted, and the information that people have about Chappelle Corby is quite distorted. So at this point, I'd just like to welcome to the show Morpheus, who goes by the codename of Morpheus, joining us from the UK to talk about the Chappelle Corby questions. Morpheus, welcome to Skid Row Radio.
Oh, hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. You're coming through a little bit deep and rumbly for some reason. Not quite sure where our connection isn't too good.
Okay.
Let me just say this. In my opinion, in relation to Chappelle Corby, there is a very important point which is often forgotten by people who actually talk about this, and particularly people who think they know what's going on, and they forget about the basic principle of a criminal justice system, which is that you can't be convicted of a crime unless it is done beyond reasonable doubt. And in order to get a conviction for a crime, there are different ways of gaining evidence to convince a jury or a judge that a person is guilty. And one of those is, of course, forensic evidence. And another one of those types of evidence is witness evidence. And another type of evidence is circumstantial evidence. Now, it may come as a shock to a lot of people in regard to the Chappelle Corby case, but there is no forensic evidence that ties Chappelle Corby to the marijuana that was found in her boogie board bag, and there is no witness evidence either. There are no witnesses who've come forward and said, yes, you know, I know that she bought marijuana, I saw the marijuana being put in her bag, none of that. There is no witness evidence to corroborate the Balinese prosecution of her, and there was no forensic evidence. And by that I mean there were no fingerprint tests, there was no CCTV camera footage used, there was no forensic tests of the marijuana for its origin. So there is really nothing other than the circumstantial evidence that links Chappelle Corby to the marijuana. And of course, her claim has always been that it was put there by someone else other than her. So at this point, let's cross now to Morpheus from the UK. Morpheus, you have built a new website called The Expendable Project, which goes into all of this evidence and more, and you've put together a list of key questions to the Australian government that need to be addressed. Now, if you could step us through what you consider to be the most important parts of the evidence of that website, that would be extremely good.
Okay, well, the Expendable Project is actually an international community group of academics and researchers from Australia, North America and Europe. And we encountered the Chappelle Corby case and the facts of the case. And you've mentioned some of them in your introduction. For example, drug smugglers do not beg for CCTV footage from airports. They don't beg for the marijuana and the baggage to be forensically tested. They don't plead their innocence when they're offered plea bargaining deals. They don't carry on for 7 years past the point of at which they've lost their sanity. We're aware of all of this, and members of the team began a research project to find out what on earth was going on and why, in particular, the Australian government and their media were essentially doing nothing to help her, and the media were persecuting her by broadcasting what were quite clearly smears and fabrications about her and her family. And the project took 3 years to the current point of time, and it was intended to go on for another six months, but as you probably know, 6 weeks ago, Chappelle tried to kill herself, and the project team decided that at that point that it had to go because we may not have 6 months. And the Expendable Project began publishing the government's own cables, the government's own letters, the government's own documentations, which have been obtained through various means, which proved basically what was going on behind the scenes, which was rather different to what they were telling the Australian public back in 2004 or And I'll give you one or two examples which you've asked for.
Sure.
Just from the airport. I mean, there's a lot of these. It's the most damning, scandalous situation involved with politicians that I've ever seen in my life, and I think that applies to anyone who's ever seen this. Starting at Brisbane, Chappelle Corby arrived at the airport, three girls, four bags, checked in normally, went off, boarded the plane and arrived in Bali. Northwest on check-in, absolutely normal, checked the bags and waved them bye-bye. Subsequently, after she'd been arrested in Bali, the Qantas system showed that the bags were 5 kilograms overweight, but she hadn't been charged an excess fee. There hadn't been any difficulty checking the bags in. So you've got to ask, you know, why the bags 5 kilograms overweight when she hadn't been charged an excess fee? And the obvious answer is because they weren't overweight when she checked them in, and they were overweight when they were placed on the aircraft. 5 kilograms was added to those bags behind the scenes. Now, the key point about this is that Chappelle Corby never knew that. Her lawyers never knew that. They were never told. So she stood before a foreign court. Qantas knew that. They never told her. The Corby family only discovered that on September the 15th when the Expendable Project published the first Expendable report. And it gets worse. Except you might imagine that's quite a large story in Australia, given how famous and well-known Chappelle is. Not one mainstream media, either broadcaster or publication, has referred to that new essential data at all. Not one reference, one column inch, nothing on TV, nothing on the radio.
Can I just ask a question about that, Morpheus, about the question of her overweight baggage? Because one thing I'm not clear about is what the normal, operations of the airline is in relation to someone who's, say, you know, 5 kilos overweight. Are you stating that, for example, if she was 5 kilos overweight, she would always definitely 100% have been told that, or does the airline sometimes just let overweight stuff go through without mentioning it? That's one point I think that's quite important.
Yeah, it depends on the amount of weight. I mean, bear in mind, weight is critical for aviation.
Okay.
It's not just a commercial matter, it's a safety matter. It's a distribution of weight on the aircraft, so on and so forth. Now, for two or three bags, 5 kilograms is quite a significant amount of weight. It's 10 pounds. It's not a few ounces, it's not a few grams, it's 5 kilograms. I mean, you forget the point, you know, it's an irrelevant point that if you're smuggling drugs, you're hardly likely to turn up at the airport with your bags 5K overweight.
That's a good point. Good point. Point taken.
Unless you're in a...
Objection sustained.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, even ignoring that, you know, 5 kilograms is not something you would turn up at the airport, check in your bags and get away with. You know, try it. Try any listener, try that. See what happens. You'll be challenged. You will pay an excess. The excess fee for 5 kilograms in 2004 was $175. So,
pretty significant.
It's quite a significant thing. And you know, so we're pretty darn sure, you can rest assured, she would have been challenged and charged had her bag been 5 kilograms overweight when she handed it over at Brisbane Airport. But she wasn't.
So what you're saying, of course, is she wasn't overweight. It was added later. And that about represents the difference in weight with the extra 4.2 kilos of marijuana. Not quite five, but, you know, that's close to it. So...
Right.
You're basically saying that this was added after her bags were checked in and then went through the system.
Why else would it happen? I mean, it's a case of looking for reasons. You know, the bag was 5 kilograms overweight on the system. They weren't when she checked them in. How would that happen? Why would that happen? And the only reason that I can think of offhand or at all is because somebody wanted to place some extra weight in the bag. Of approximately 4 to 5 kilograms, you'd err on the side of the higher number, which would be 5 kilograms. Her bag was 5 kilograms overweight on the system, and it still is. We've got the letter, it's on the website, the letter from Qantas confirming that.
Okay, so let's just work through the actual hypothesis now about what really took place, because that's really important to explain all this, otherwise it makes no sense, right? Of course, okay. there have been revelations that have been made, and this dates back to 2005, that their baggage handlers were involved in drug transportation.
We will return to the interview about Chappelle Corby right after this short break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Could printed books soon be a thing of the past? Apparently, a lot of kids these days are exchanging book pages for web pages. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to tell you what's happening to literacy.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Forget books and magazines. A recent study by the UK's National Literacy Trust found that text messages are the number one reading material for kids today, and numbers 2 and 3 are email and Facebook. That's not surprising, since cell phones and computers outnumber novels in most homes. We adults are obviously not setting a very good example. Of course, text messages are not known for their literary quality or for their outstanding spelling and grammar. In fact, they're some of the worst writing around. So if you want your kids to develop basic English skills, tell them to unplug from Facebook and turn off Twitter, then hand them an old-fashioned book. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Welcome back to Truth News. You're listening to a recorded interview from Radio Skid Row 88.9 FM on Monday the 31st of October, when I was speaking to Morpheus from the Expendable Project, which is an international group that is trying to uncover information in relation to Chappelle Corby that could prove her innocence. Of course, they believe she is innocent. Her family believe she is innocent. Many people around the world believe she's innocent. And many great songwriters have written songs about it, as you just heard there. So I will return now to the interview from Morpheus from the UK.
And that people, unwitting passengers, completely innocent passengers, were being used as drug mules, and the baggage handlers were putting stuff in their bags in one capital city and then taking them out in another capital city. Now, of course, Chappelle was travelling from Brisbane via Sydney to Bali, and the theory goes, and there was a prisoner who was released in order to testify to say this, that basically that they would have taken they would have put it in her bag at Brisbane and they would have taken it out in Sydney, but so we can assume that yes, her bag did go through. It may have been normal, not underweight. It went through the baggage system, and someone in there put the stuff in her bag, and then presumably it then was weighed again. I'm not quite sure how it then got to the, you know, the new figure of 5 kilos overweight. But I'm assuming then that there must be a secondary weighing process that takes place that then had to go into the system. I'm merely guessing that. But then obviously it was recorded as being a higher weight. Then it went to Sydney. And then in Sydney, when it was in transit, it should have been taken out by the people down there who were part of the drug syndicate. But presumably they forgot, or they couldn't find it, or something went wrong, and the bag went on to Bali with the marijuana in it. And of course, we know that the bag was slit open as well, and that's another anomaly that we haven't got an explanation for. But I'll just hand it over to you to elaborate on what I've just said.
Yeah, I mean, the context you've explained there is important. Australian airports 2004-05, possibly even now, I don't know, but certainly then were systemic corruption, criminality. You're talking, I think there was a figure of 39% of baggage handlers had serious criminal convictions at Sydney, something like that. There was report after report after report published internally within the government. There was the Kessing report, which he got ruthlessly pursued for years because they were leaked to the media. And they all said the same thing, that there was corruption all over the airports and baggage handlers were shifting gear around on a systemic basis from capital city to capital city and from abroad. So that was the sort of background to at the time that she travelled. Now, what should have happened at Sydney Airport is that her bag should have been taken off the domestic aircraft, transferred to a bag, what's called a baggage makeup area, scanned, and then placed on the flight to Bali. And we've got, again, on the Expendable website, there's the letters from the Department of Transport, which state quite clearly all bags going on an international flight from Australia to Indonesia must be scanned. It's mandatory. No ifs or buts about that, no doubt whatsoever.
This is an X-ray scan, right?
Yeah, that's an X-ray scan, yeah. On all outgoing baggage from Australia to Indonesia. Now, we have on the website there a letter from Senator Christopher Ellison, who was the Justice and Customs Minister for Australia, to Michael Keelty, who was the AFP Commissioner. And in it, he states quite clearly that one bag wasn't scanned. Guess which one? It was the boogie board bag. It's the only bag that wasn't scanned. He's discussing with Keelty the importance of that information to Chappelle. And, you know, just think about that. You've got one bag not scanned, and it happens to be the bag that ends up in Bali with her drugs in. That's clearly vital, primary evidence.
How would he know, Morpheus, how would he know that that bag was not scanned? How is that proven, or what's the, you know, how does he know that? How can he know that?
He states in his letter that on the 5th of July 2005, he received a letter from Sydney Aircraft Corporation Limited, SACL, who were responsible for the scanning. So what was happening at that time was that Chappelle's lawyers were asking all sorts of questions about the scanning, what happens behind the scenes and so on. And they'd gone to SACL, they'd gone to Ellison, and they'd gone to everyone they could. And SACL ended up writing to Ellison, the Justice and Customs Minister, basically saying it's the only bag. He discusses it with Keelty. Two days later, on the 8th of July 2005, Chappelle Corby's lawyer writes to Ellison and asks him about screening. This very same topic.
Right.
He doesn't tell him.
Okay.
Four days after that, Chappelle Corby's lawyer writes again. All the letters are on the website, by the way. Chappelle Corby's lawyer writes again to Ellison, asks him about the screening. Ellison doesn't tell him.
Okay.
Chappelle Corby and Chappelle Corby's family didn't know that it was the only bag not scanned until September the 15th, 2011, when they read it in the Expendable Project report. Now, again, that's absolutely vital, primary evidence that the bag has been treated differently, has pretty much been tampered with at Sydney, and Chappelle Corby, Mercedes Corby, totally oblivious to it. They were never told. And again, back to the point I mentioned earlier, the current government knew this on the 15th of September because they'd been sent a copy of the reports.
Which year are we talking about there? Sorry, 2011.
This information came out in 2011 when the Expendable Project published it.
Oh, okay.
Expendable Project at the same time sent it to the politicians,
okay.
Sent it to the Australian media, and it's been greeted with blackout, a wall of silence. Again, we have ministers of state, the chief of police, discussing this, withholding this evidence in a direct sequence of correspondence with Chappelle's lawyer. You'd have thought, my God, what's going on here? You know, this is the government,
sure,
withholding primary evidence from a citizen. You'd have thought this would be all over the front pages and the main news headlines. Not a single column entry in any Australian mainstream newspaper. You're quite entitled to ask what the hell is going on with the media over that.
Okay, we're back with Skid Row, and we're on the line with Morpheus from the Expendable Project from the United Kingdom. Morpheus, we do have to terminate the interview shortly, unfortunately. Okay. I'd love to continue talking to you, but we've got another call in coming. Can you just give us a closing summary, just a quick just a minute of like what you think is the most important thing and what we should do and what we can do to bring some justice and truth to this issue?
Okay, the most disturbing thing at this very moment in time is that here we have black and white evidence by their own hand, the government's own hand, their own correspondence, cables, letters, and so on, which doesn't just prove that Chappelle Corby is completely innocent. It proves that the government always knew she was, and they withheld evidence. They misled. They misled their own MPs, they misled the public. It's an absolute horror story. And it goes on and on because the current government are aware of this and it's too big a hot potato for them. They're not doing anything. And the media are suppressing all this data. So what to do? I would suggest everybody, and this is where people can help, take a look at the website, download the PDFs for themselves, because we're under constant threat that somehow they will close the website and they'll get rid of all this this damning evidence. The website's www.expendable.tv. It's called the Expendable Project, so it's expendable.tv. If you go there, you can read it all for yourselves. All the viewers can take a look at it and download it. And please do download it and keep hold of it just in case something happens to the project itself, because we have had one or two problems with the AFP and probably ASIO as well. So don't be told what this is all about. Go and read it for yourself, because it is absolutely alarming and disturbing, and it's beyond what you would normally conceive could possibly happen and what any government could do to any of its citizens.
Absolutely. That is absolutely right, and I encourage everyone to do the same. Download it. Morpheus, thanks for coming on today, and I'm going to stay in touch with you. I'm going to get you back on Truth News Radio again at some point. We'll have a more extended interview. Thanks again for everything you've done to help Chappelle and to help Australian democracy.
Absolutely no problem. Thanks very much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
have a great
Morpheus.
Day.
Cheers, mate. All right, there you go. There's Morpheus there. Oh, so how are we going to get out of here then? What just happened is pretty heavy stuff. Workers Radio.
Yeah, we're being tracked.
We're definitely being tracked. Thanks, Harold. I knew this would happen. I'll get you on here.
There's a SWAT team coming down.
Workers Radio Sydney. Ropes. We'll be back hopefully with Granny.
Bashing down the door right now.
Okay, that concludes our interview with Morpheus from the Expendable Project, but please stay with us. In the next segment, we have an interview coming up with Sean Hatton, Chappelle's uncle, and that's going to be equally riveting, I'm sure. So stay with us for the final segment of Truth News Radio Australia. And of course, you can find all our podcasts, including two previous shows we've done on the Chappelle Corby issue. Just go to truthnews.com.au and click on Chappelle Corby, that's one of the categories on the right-hand side, or just do a search on Google. Stay with us.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible, who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, "Is that why we got the page to not come in today?" end quote. Bruce Shaw is interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lies, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning, and if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the Mirabelle? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
At hempusa.org, we offer chemical-free products to people around the world, detoxifying, self-healing, while rebuilding the immune system. We urge our listeners to please consider our largest-selling product, microplant powder. Our microplant powder is rich in silica and probiotics to help rebuild the immune system and to create a healthy stomach flora. Microplant powder is excellent for daily intake and is perfect to add to your storage shelter. We urge our listeners to please visit us at hempusa.org. And remember, all of our products are chemical-free and healthy to eat. We constantly strive to give you the best service, highest quality, and rapid shipping anywhere. And we offer free shipping on orders over $95 in the U.S. Please visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. See what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to Truth News. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard there from Morpheus from the UK, who's done a lot of research into some very important facts in relation to the Chappelle Corby case, which are not widely known and are extremely important because they demonstrate that the government has not been honest in its dealings with this situation. But I want to now turn to look more at the personal side of this, and I have on the line Sean Hatton, who is Chappelle's uncle, who's been on the show before. We want to catch up and we want to find a bit about what's been happening in the last year or so since we've covered this on Truth News. So I'd just like to say welcome, Sean, to Truth News.
Thank you.
Yeah, look, great to have you back on. Look, Sean, you obviously, I mean, you know Chappelle well, your family. Of course, for you, this whole situation is very different. Obviously, you know in your heart that she's innocent. We, as members of the general public, we have to put together the facts and try to make up our mind with such a confusing myriad of facts and pseudo-facts and misinformation and disinformation over the years. It's very hard for us to know what to think. Now, what I'd like to do, just in the short time that we've got, can you just tell us a few things about Chappelle? I mean, how old is Chappelle now?
Chappelle will be 33 now. Yeah, so she's 33. She was 33 last July 10.
And, of course, she was 27 when she went to Bali on that fateful...
She might be 34 now, come to think of it. Yeah, it's been 7 years now, so...
So it's actually 7 years. We've just crossed the seven-year anniversary, haven't we, of her arrest in Bali. That's already a very substantial chunk of anyone's life, and she's young, so it's really, really huge. What is her current state? I mean, I know that she's had a lot of mental issues. I know she's been on medication. I can't imagine that's got any better. What have you heard?
Yeah, no, she just battled by it. Her medication she's on is just a Band-Aid. It has to be, the doses are already incredibly high just to keep her sane. But you know, the her psychiatrist, you know, he can't believe, you know, the situation that she's in, the amount of drugs that they have to give her, because it's just a recipe for disaster. The dosages that she's on,
yes.
And he wouldn't prescribe that to anyone in Australia. But because she has to virtually self-medicate, or you know, get another prisoner to medicate her, you know, it's just a really bad situation. But we'd have to do the best we can. Who knows what it's doing to her brain? You know, she's definitely not the girl that went in there 7 years ago. She's a shadow of that now.
Yeah, and I do worry about the effects of the medications. This is something we talk about a lot on Truth News, if you've seen any of our other shows. A lot of these antidepressant medications are extremely dangerous, but I totally understand that in her case, it's probably a choice between two evils, and you probably have to go with what will keep her at least calm and not, I guess, get out of control. And of course please continue.
I was just going to say that, you know, for anyone that's guilty, they can cop it. You know, they can understand, like, I've done a really stupid thing, and they know that there's enough proof there, and they're in jail. But for someone who's innocent, totally, you know, he just went over there for a holiday, and you know, the very premise of the crime is just ridiculous. But anyway, she thought for 5 years every day that door was going to open, and so she's never been able to relax and just live life, you know, sort of thing. She's always thinking any second something's got to give. When you're innocent, that's, you know, I think most people believe if you're innocent, this can't happen to you. It's just not possible.
Yes.
But, you know, it's happened to Chappelle.
It has indeed. I mean, can we just step back a bit and I just ask you, like, from your point of view, she is totally innocent. And I think it's just really important for our audience to know that.
You've only got to think of any member of your family, you know, would any of them be stupid enough to take that sort of amount of marijuana to a country like Indonesia that's, you know, she took two flights instead of one. She put a name and address and everything on a bag. And now we know for 100% sure certainty that her bag was interfered with. It was tampered with when it was at Sydney Airport, because there's 100% proof because of the SACL coding that should have happened, a Sydney Airport Corporation Limited code that had to be placed onto every bag. And of all the bags that went through that airport, her bag and that bag alone was the only bag that wasn't screened. And one, it was illegal for the baggage to even be put on the plane. So, you know, her whole defence was that someone had interfered with the bag. And now we have proof, 100% proof, that her bag was tampered with, and the press don't want to know about it.
So we have here just a case. This could happen to anyone. I mean, we have a case here of a person who she was studying beauty therapy. She went on a holiday with her family.
Just for Mercedes' 30th birthday. And, like, myself and my girlfriend at the time, we went over there for Mercedes' birthday. Everything was all going to be just a big reunion for everyone. It was supposed to be a really happy week or two for all of us. And, this happened.
It's really important to understand this could happen to you, to me, to anyone listening. This could happen to you. We've had cases where people have reported it. There's been tourists that have reported that they came to their hotel room, they opened their bags, and they found marijuana in their bags. That has been reported, and that was on mainstream news as well. But sorry, please continue, Sean.
Yeah, back in 1997, that couple. That's right. So it does happen, and we know that there was a report made by Alan Kessing, and he made the report that it was rife. It was well known that there was corrupt baggage handlers moving marijuana, and that was in his 2003 report. That was it wasn't acted upon. It was they just wanted to hide that report, and when no action happened, Alan Kessing, we're not sure exactly what customs officers released it to the press. And then they tried to, they wanted to bury it. And that report was tabled, and Mick Kelty would have been privy to that report, and yet he still said that there was little or no evidence to suggest that heroin or any other drug was being trafficked through Sydney Airport. Well, that report was the opposite. It was that it was rice going through Sydney Airport. So no matter what he's saying there's little or no evidence, well, the report, for one, was evidence. So you know, for him to say that was just an outright lie. But there's been so many lies by the Australian government, by top-ranking members of the Australian government, Ellison, Howard. It's just unbelievable. They've just tried to protect Australian interests at the Australian airport, because the big thing is that you can't have a Sydney airport being insecure. You can't, because yeah. flights are leaving from Sydney for all over the world, and none of those other airports or no passenger wants to think that they're getting onto a plane that's not secure. And that's the case at Sydney Airport. And that's what the whole thing is being hidden, because no one wants to report it. And because the government got involved in the cover-up, no one wants to report it because it's too big.
Exactly. And, of course, remember, Mick Kielty was the guy that put Mohammed Hanif in prison on trumped-up charges, which turned out to be absolute rubbish. And, I mean, he's got so much blood on his hands over what he did as police commissioner, that there is obvious corruption going on here. There is obvious distortion, lying, deception.
Because it's so obvious that there's black and white facts. Like Kelty got on the 7:30 report and stated categorically that Chappelle Corby refused to have the marijuana tested, DNA tested, because what he said on 7:30 report was that when she found out that the results of the tests were going to be given to the defence and the prosecution, and so she refused it. Now, we've got documentation that says that there's all through the Expendable project that with the seal from the Bali consulate, where she's asked for this testing to be done. So he just makes these outright lies. Ellison's said the same thing. There's documentation where he's telling constituents that exactly that was the case, that Chappelle refused these DNA tests. And that wasn't the case, and that's what's been reported. So people think, oh, she must be guilty. But it's lies that... and we can prove the lies. They couldn't prove their lies. They were just stating things. But we can prove that they lied through documentation and through, old reports, and it's all there to people to look at. But, of course, the press don't want to tell the story because it's just too big. And people, you think, you're crazy, you know, so this can't be true. But I tell you, it's happening to Chappelle.
So, folks, Google the Expendable Project. You can go to www.expendable.tv or just put the Expendable Project into Google. Have a look at all the documents, all the reports that have been put together by some really dedicated volunteers who are trying to help resolve this situation, many of them working from overseas. I'd like to see more people working from within Australia too. I know there have been many. We were talking earlier and we're just about to finish up, but you were saying we need to embarrass the government. Just in a short closing statement, what can we do to embarrass the government? What steps should we be taking?
Well, just tell your friends. Tell them to read the Expendable Project, because it's all there in black and white. It's the truth is out there if anyone wants to really look at it. And the more people that become aware of it, the more, you know, it'll be stopped. Because Bali is there is so much corruption there. And the government are even covering up this poor kid now. You know, he's...
Oh, look, it's outrageous what they're doing to that kid. The laws are ridiculous to start off with, but we won't go into that. That's another subject. But look, been great having you on, and we will continue to track this story. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you very much. Okay.
That's a wrap from Truth News.
The Bible remains the most popular book in the world, yet countless readers are frustrated because they struggle to understand it. Some new translations try to help by simplifying the text, but in the process can compromise the profound meaning of the Scripture. Enter the Recovery Version. First, this new translation is extremely faithful and accurate, but the real story is the more than 9,000 explanatory footnotes. Difficult and profound passages are opened up in a marvelous way, providing an entrance into the riches of the Word beyond which you've ever experienced before. Bibles for America would like to give you a free recovery version simply for the asking. This comprehensive yet compact study Bible is yours just by calling us toll-free at 1-888-551-0102 or by ordering online at freestudybible.com. That's freestudybible.com.